Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Cliff Payne. Cliff is a wounded veteran who is here to talk about some of the tools, techniques, and resources for anyone making the transition from the military to a civilian career. So welcome to the show, Cliff. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Excellent. Thank you very much. And thanks so much for hosting this podcast. It, like I said, provides a tremendous amount of value and really do appreciate it. So jumping right in, again, my name is Cliff D. Payne. I am a retired infantry officer. And currently, I am the chairman of the Trinity Group. We provide business consulting services anywhere from merger acquisition, gross margin improvement, divestment, streamlining headcount processes, and as well as the CEO of Decisive Aim, which provides personal protection, preparedness, and defensive tactics training to the civilian and law enforcement communities. So it's a little bit about me.
Awesome. Yeah. So so we're talking about transitioning out of the military. Obviously, this is something that anyone who gets into the military at some point or another is going to have to start thinking about their transition, how they're going to get out. And I know it's a difficult thing for many people to do, especially with regards to employment. You know, what are they going to do right after the military? You know, once when that military paycheck is as great as it is dries up, you know, what are they going to do for, you know, to support themselves, their families and things like that? So if you're someone who's in the military right now, when do you think it would be to be a good time to start planning out that transition into civilian life if you are still in the military?
Right. That's actually an excellent question. And I like how the question is one that you can measure. And I think that's important. So understanding first and foremost, you know, as you're making your transition, understand your window. So are you transitioning in 2 years and you're backwards planning into a 30, 60, 90 day plan from the 24 month, or understand, are you in the window now? And obviously your planning techniques and the sense of urgency, let alone the communication going out from you into your professional networks is going to change in frequency and volume, depending on where you are in that window. But first and foremost, it's important to understand where are you at in that window, because that will, again, kind of shape and change, you know, how you're getting into your post-military career mindset, as well as building that professional civilian network.
Yeah. So, and as you're planning this stuff out, what are some of the things that you should be considering, you know, when you're thinking about this post-military career, what, you know, the types of things that you're going to be able to do and what you're qualified for and things like that. What types of things should you really consider in this process?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So there's a couple key points that, you know, you almost want to set down and map out and really begin to associate a timeline with the mapping process. But a couple notes that I've got here that I think is incredibly value is keep an open mind. You know, understand that, you know, you may be coming from a special operations community and you're transitioning out and, you know, you want to get into operations, you know, using the air quotes here, operations, you know, manufacturing operations, distribution operations, it's important that you not pigeonhole yourself, because there's a translation from a military resume into a civilian occupancy that may or may not translate well. So 2 points again being, keep an open mind, do not put an emphasis on a specific role more than maybe your geographic preferences and the connection that you are going to have with that organization. And the second one being, immediately begin to build a relationship with a recruiting network. Understand that the recruiter, that relationship now becomes your decisive effort. And building that relationship, one, build on trust, and really find someone who's going to be able, getting back to that resume comment, that is going to be able to take your military experiences and translate them properly into, you know, the roles that an organization is trying to fill. Because again, someone's going to hire very specifically for a need. And what that recruiter needs to be able to do is understand who you are, where you're coming from, and translate that into those needs.
Right. And I like that you said how, you know, the recruiter will be able to help you translate those military skills into, you know, the needs that future employers are going to have. Because there's a lot of times people are coming from a military occupation that doesn't necessarily have a direct correlation to a civilian job. You know, you and I were both infantry. There's not too many infantry jobs that are out there, you know, directly, you know, doing the, right, you know, infantry job. But the skills that we learned in the infantry could directly, you know, relate to other civilian jobs that are out there. And I think if you're just so focused on the fact that you're an infantryman and this is all you've ever done, you're not going to really see the bigger picture of all the possibilities that might be out there for the different types of jobs that you could be focusing on. So,
sure.
The idea with getting in touch with a recruiter and forming that relationship where they can help you out and form some of that stuff, that's a great piece of advice there. And what other types of things can recruiters do for you? They can, like you just talked about, they can help you translate some of your military skills into, you know, what the civilian sector is going to require. But, what are some of the other benefits of working with a recruiter to help you out in this transition?
Right. I like to give analogies and comparisons that maybe your audience is going to be able to connect and resonate with. So if you think of the relationship that you begin to build with your recruiter as your language assistant, right? So that person who is going to be your interpreter, who is going to convey what it is you're trying to get accomplished, you know, with that host nation leadership. So, you know, here's a good comparison for you. The recruiter is going to be able to get you in front of decision makers. And they're going to, again, not only help translate the resume, but they're going to get you in front of the people who are going to make the decisions for the hiring process. And if necessary, a good recruiter, a good LA, if you will, is going to build that relationship with you, understand where you're coming from in order to best represent you in front of those decision makers. You know, when I really think about lost opportunity, you know, and that's a term that I used in the private sector here, you know, really across the spectrum of different disciplines, but a lost opportunity is anywhere where you would have been an effective contributor to an organization, but it was a miss on the front end from not being able to build a relationship with the recruiter and be able to properly translate those military skills onto paper. Again, fitting the needs of that hiring organization. So avoid the lost opportunity, build the relationship, and understand that a good recruiter is going to get you in front of the decision makers.
Yeah. And that's, I think, a key point too, because getting out of the military, you may not have had the opportunity to make those relationships with the decision makers who will be in charge of the hiring process or, or anything like that in some of these companies. So, having an ally on your side who can leverage their network and make those connections for you will be immensely beneficial because you may not otherwise be able to get into a company because you just don't know who the right people are to reach out to. So that is a big benefit too to using a recruiter. What are some of the other common issues that maybe veterans have once they're entering the civilian workforce? So, after they've, maybe they've worked with a recruiter, they got their resume squared away and they found a job that they think is, going to be along the right path for them, in terms of their future career. What are some of the issues that they have once they're now in the civilian workforce, maybe with their coworkers or their boss or things like that? And more importantly, what can they do to help avoid some of these issues?
Yeah. So everything in the military and outside of the military is all based on relationships, and the effective relationships are always founded in trust. And that's just not a professional relationship. That's all relationships. So some of the pitfalls a transitioning military leader really across all disciplines and ranks could possibly get into are, I like to categorize them as the get over phase. And it is almost exactly how it sounds. So you need to get over as a senior leader or just as, a military person transitioning, you need to understand that, leaders have become accustomed to having a staff to which they delegate much of their work. So maybe this is more field grade officer up. This usually does not translate into the private sector, right off the bat, right? So getting over the fact that there are tasks and responsibilities that you are now responsible for, as you've transitioned out of the uniform into an office, if you will, there's things that you're going to have to do that you may not be accustomed to. No one's going to be preparing your debriefs. No one's going to be preparing, the planning phases for you in the S3 shop. These are all things that you're going to be doing day to day. So get used to and get over having to really pick up a lot of the grunt work, if you will. You're going to have managers, bosses, leaders, if you will. And again, I use leader. For us, right, is a it's a verb, it's an action, and it's capitalized, right? That's the kind of emphasis we put on leader. So I kind of tie that to getting over that. Once you take that uniform off, leader is now lowercase, and it does not carry the same connotation in the civilian sector. So understand that there's going to be leaders, again with the air quotes, above you who are not really deserving of that role. They may not be as talented. They may not be hardworking or as driven as you are. And if you're coming into the civilian sector with the same mindset as you did when you took over your first squad, platoon, or command position, you're going to fail. And this is the mindset that I'm referring to. And I'll kind of preface this first with a statistic here. So I was reading in Forbes 2017 report, 70% of senior military leaders who transition into the private sector. One side note that this was actually polled with 500,000 participants. So this is not a small population here.
Right.
So again, 70% of senior military leaders who transition into the private sector will transition out of that initial organization on the south side of 18 months. So as they transition out of the military, their first civilian role, 70% of them will be gone in 18 months. So again, you have to ask and understand why. And it typically lies in the culture. So this cultural transition that we see, you're transitioning into a culture you are no longer responsible for. You are not going to have an immediate impact on. You're no longer responsible for the refinement and the advancement of that culture as you were in the military, even in all ranks. This is why we, those that have served really do resonate with the, with the military. It's, you have an impact, a private can have an impact on a battle, period. We've seen this you know, thousands of times throughout the history of our country, right? You could be a transitioning lieutenant colonel getting into a senior ops role at Amazon, right? You're not going to change the culture day one, nor are you expected to, but you got to get over that. And you got to get that into the right mindset and, acknowledge that, those gains are incremental. They're earned over a period of time. And just because you're, transitioning as a field grade officer, it really isn't, going to carry that much cloud as you would think. So really get over that and understand that it's a cultural transition, and the culture itself of that organization is theirs, and you become a part of it. And first you must assimilate before you can begin to change and influence. So I, again, getting back to the pitfalls, understanding again, it's their culture. You need to assimilate. The other note that I would put is define, develop, and map out your new civilian reputation. So this is something I think a lot of folks, include myself from personal experience, transitioning out of the military, getting into the GE Aviation Leader Development Program. So that LDP, for transitioning field grade officers, I came directly into it thinking, okay, I'm carrying in all these experiences. And because of that, here's my expected outcome, right? I expect X, Y, and Z to happen just because of those military experiences. Well, that's just not the reality. So it's incredibly important that, you get over the cultural aspect and that you understand that, you really need to map out what this new reputation is going to look like. Like, seriously, map it out, write it down. What are the three things you want to be known for? And I think it's a healthy exercise to do that and differentiate those maybe three things you were known for while you wore the uniform and really focus on the things that you want to further refine and development. That in of itself, having that kind of forethought and understanding that there is going to be a difference and maybe even a difference in how you operate, that's a very healthy exercise.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to go back just a second to a point that you were talking about in terms of the culture. Right. And, any business that you go to is going to have each business has their own kind of unique culture. The military has a culture and that also could be defined by, the leadership in, a company or a battalion or, whatever the case may be. But in general, the military has a culture, where there's certain norms and certain things that you would expect from one unit to another, going throughout the military. Same thing with your civilian sector. Each company that you go to, they're going to have their own unique set of cultures and values and things like that that will define what the work experience is going to be like. And you sort of just need to sideline the military culture that you've mm-hmm. grown to expect. Some people have they got into the military maybe when they're 18, 20 years old, something like that. And they've stayed in the military for 20 years. That's pretty much all they've known in their adult working life.
Right.
But then now they're transitioning, they're 40 something years old maybe, and they're transitioning into a civilian career. You kind of have to just forget about those last 20 years as far as like the cultural aspect goes. You're not necessarily, this isn't true for every company, but it's not always that you're going to be working together as a team on things. There might be some people who are out there who are in it for themselves and they're right. looking to advance themselves, and that might be a culture shock to some veterans who are getting into the career and then realizing, I'm on my own here. Like I kind of right. have to fight for myself because that other guy over there is not looking out for me. They're looking out for themselves. And so, huge culture shock. Sometimes I would imagine.
Yeah. That's actually an excellent point worth stopping and maybe unpacking a little further, when you say the word culture, and I think as you transition, you almost have to redefine what that means. In the military, for the last 5 to 6 years, it's really been popular to say, we have this culture of excellence, right? And that's predicated on a center of excellence and really more geographic and more discipline specific. But you know, that civilian sector may not like that. They may define their culture as, you know, you are expected to improve the bottom line by 3%. And if that has a negative headcount impact, but a positive impact on the bottom line, then so be it. Right. And you're kind of thinking, well, I'm coming from a culture of excellence where preservation of life and headcount's kind of important. And it may not be the case, you know, in the civilian sector. I really do like the point that you made. It isn't like totally cutthroat where, you know, hey, it's me against the world. But I do think that, you know, as a transitioning military person, you really can't be naive either. You know, so when I think about this, you know, we started to talk about a culture and kind of unpacking and mapping a timeline here. Develop a short-term plan with specific personal objectives, and maybe not necessarily your professional objectives. And by that, I mean, don't look at the job that you're taking right out of the military, you know, and see that as, you know, hey, I did my 20 and now I'm, you know, I'm locked in 20 years here at Lockheed, right? Just as an example, it's not the end all be all for the entire civilian career. You know, statistics will tell us that every 36 months, you know, a operations manager or equivalent is transitioning out of an organization. So, you know, that's just a fact. So the stats are clear that the first job out of the military, as we've already discussed, is more than not a transition period for you, which you're going to adjust into the civilian working life. We talked about the civilian leadership change and the civilian culture, and it will, you know, again, statistically speaking, it'll be short-lived. So, you know, that's always kind of important to come around on the back end of, you know, I guess what some would concern as a heavy statistic, but so use this as a time. You know, my recommendations and how I coach a lot of the folks that I know transitioning, you know, use this as a time to develop, rehearse, and execute your personal objectives. So, you know, keeping those same processes that, you know, you'd be familiar with transitioning out of the military, having used for however many years, you know, use that same process, use that same battle rhythm, but make it more so specific to what it is you're trying to accomplish personally, and not necessarily this, you know, naive, maybe connotation that, hey, you know, I've transitioned and I'm locked in and this is where I'm going to be for the next 20 years. It's just not the case.
Yeah. And you touched on another point that I think is important too, you know, to focus on your personal goals, you know, or your personal, you know, objectives, I think is the word you use there. Because you might have some personal things that you've wanted to do for yourself, but maybe you just couldn't do because of your military service. Maybe geographically you couldn't do things because maybe you wanted to live near the beach or something, and you were stationed somewhere in Oklahoma or something. That's just not a possibility, you know? So, I think, you know, focusing on your own personal objectives, the things that you want for you, for your family. And also there's probably a mental aspect too, you know, with all of this, because this transition, you know, out of the military is almost a grieving process, because there's a person that you were before and you're not that person anymore. I mean, it's still a big part of who you are. But you know, you don't put on the uniform every day anymore once and you've transitioned out. And so that there's a bit of that going on too. So, you know, as far as the transition on the personal side, is there anything that people can do to make that go a little bit more smoothly, to define what their objectives are and you know, kind of just think through what it is that they want to achieve with this transition?
Absolutely. So, you know, in the military, we have, you know, multiple raters, right? So if I use this as an example of folks that are evaluating your performance, your intermediate and your senior raters, you know, as you make this transition, surround yourself with folks that you could call, you know, your intermediate raider and your senior raider, folks that are going to give you direct, specific, measurable feedback that you're going to be able to take back, digest, and use that feedback into your mapping process and the development of those specific goals, objectives. That's incredibly important, you know, and that's just another way of saying develop your network, your personal network first. And so from the mental aspect, there's I like that. I've heard that often. It's a grieving process. And really what I tell folks, you know, hold on to those qualities, characteristics that positively define you, and everything else just shed, let it go. It's important to do that because, you know, if we use this as a professional example, right? So it is very, very attractive, and it is going to be a great characteristic that you hold on to, your timeliness, your candor, your professionalism. Maybe you are, someone who is very thoughtful and very meticulous. Those are all great qualities and characteristics to hold on to. This senior rater, intermediate rater is going to tell you, you know, in this personal network, that it is not attractive to use acronyms in the civilian world. They do not like that.
Right.
They do not like 0600. They do not like 1300. As convenient as it is for us, right? And we probably know that better than we do. Okay, 2 p.m., what is that? Like, maybe that's an actual thought. Those just aren't things that are considered very attractive or desirable when it comes to, you know, hey, I'm going to employ this top performer, but man, this guy or gal's been out for like 3 years and, you know, they are still like, knife hand people, they're closing someone's personal space, and they're just kind of abrasive, right? Those aren't good qualities and characteristics to hold on to. So again, surround yourself with a personal network of someone who is going to shoot you straight, you know, those that are really going to be around you to lift you up, and you know, someone that's really going to give you good solid feedback that you can again measure and improve upon.
Yeah, that I like the way you phrase that. How there are some good and bad characteristics, and in the military, a lot of these things are seen as good things.
Right.
Like things like how you tell time. You know, obviously that's just in the vernacular. That's just how they tell time in the military, is in that 24-hour format. Right. But that's just not how civilians do it. And you know, unless you're working for a veteran heavy company where, you know, a lot of people who work there are going to know what you're talking about. There, a lot of people are just going to be very confused,
right?
Despite the fact that it's a much better way to tell time.
Noted and agreed. Yes.
Yeah. But there's also the good and bad characteristics. And I think you have to realize which ones are not going to fit in very well in that culture that you're heading into. Right. There's that you may not realize them right away either, what all of these things are, but you might have to just kind of be aware of your surroundings and pay attention to what other people are doing. And if one of these things doesn't look like the other, it's probably wrong at that point. Yeah. You know,
absolutely. And I almost want to make a point here. As you kind of take that step back and you self-evaluate, there's a little bit of homework for a transitioning military leader or just any service member. Do your homework regarding the organization. Be picky in the sense that, read mission statements, read the values, read the ethics by which the corporation or business has built their framework around. Do your homework up front. So, I shared this statistic a couple of days ago to some of my personal and professional networks here. You know, the 70% after 18 months are gone, right? And, the conversation was actually in context of, well, what's the cost of corporate America for that, right? Mm-hmm. So that, was a rabbit hole we went down. But my point being, do the homework up front and make a conscious decision. Is this an organization that I want to be a part of that represents me, you know, something that I can be proud of? And if there's any hesitation whatsoever, you may want to use that as a, you know, kind of pause moment, take that knee face out and understand that, you know, this is probably not the avenue that you want to pursue. And that to me, I think is, you know, an exercise that's one, healthy, and two, that's going to improve that 70%, you know, kind of drop rate that we see in the first 18 months.
Yeah. And I think some people getting out of the military, you know, especially when they enter kind of that 3 to 6 month window, before they're getting out, if they don't have a job lined up, they might kind of feel a little bit nervous about, you know, what the future is going to hold for them. And they may just jump on anything, you know, at that point to, just have a job that they can, you know, pay the bills, keep a roof over their head, food on the table, that type of thing. And we'll deal with the rest later. But that mindset and that attitude probably doesn't help that 70% number that you're talking about either, where, you know, some people may just jump on the first opportunity that comes their way without doing the research of the companies like you were talking about. And so, you know, I think you're right. It is important to get that research out of the way, know what it is that you're looking for, know what it is that these companies have to offer, and make sure that you kind of vet these things out. And, you know, try to figure it out and don't just jump on the first opportunity that comes your way. I've learned that the hard way several times in life when I had the shiny object syndrome and I just went after the first thing that looked good and it wasn't exactly what I was hoping it to be. And, you know, that's happened with, job offers, that's happened with buying a car, that's happened with all sorts of things. And I think we tend to get that and we convince ourselves that something is a good idea, even though it maybe isn't necessarily the best idea. So I think, yeah, you're right. Plan that type of stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and that really is the key word. It's planning. So, you know, how do we combat, you know, maybe this decision-making process, you know, we evaluate it, we take a step back and, you know, really the sense has been, I'd say at least in the last 5 years, that as you begin to see a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, so let's say you're going towards your 20 in year 17, you begin your exfil, you begin planning, you begin backwards planning to that 20th year and really understand, you know, what those milestones are. And, you know, you really want to, do yourself a favor and understand that at, you know, year 17, I need to be here. At year 18, I need to be here. So when you're ready to go and you have that DD-214, you're not then looking for a job, again, contributing to this 70% that we see. You know, you really want to be, hey, I'm transitioning, not that I'm resetting. That's important.
Right. Yeah, exactly. A few months ago, I did I asked a question on a military group on Facebook that I'm a part of. And I asked the question about, and I forget exactly how I phrased it, but it was something along the lines of, what was the hardest thing about the transition out of the military, you know, for you? And the vast majority of people who responded to it said something about dealing with civilians. Just whether it was at work, whether it was, you know, if they went back to school or something like that, it was dealing with civilians was one of the hardest things for people getting out of the military. And it's an unfortunate reality that you're going to have to deal with civilians. I know that's a hard thing to do for a lot of people, but, you know, a lot of them were talking about things like their work ethic is not there. Right. Their integrity isn't there. And, you know, to what they've come to expect from other people in their time in the military. And they, maybe they complain about petty things, you know, seemingly petty things to, you know, folks who are in the military who are used to sleeping out in a field with no heat or running water or things like that. And they're complaining that their coffee is cold or something. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's, there's just so many like little things that dealing with the civilians is actually a pretty significant hurdle for a lot of people getting out of the military. And I think the reason why I bring this up is I think what you're talking about, some of this planning and some of this research that you're talking about will help you get into a better mindset of what to expect when you get out of the military. And you'll know what to expect in terms of like the culture of the company that you're looking into to work at. And you'll know what to expect with, you know, the types of people who work there. You know, if you can get to know some of those people, you'll know what to expect beforehand. And so it's not going to be a complete and total culture shock, and it's not going to be this really abrupt and rough transition that I think a lot of people do struggle with, just based on this very, very informal poll on a you know, Facebook group that I conducted. But it seems like that it's a big thing that people struggle with. So I do like that you put that out there in terms of, you know, doing your research and being prepared.
Yeah, it's you know, gather your intelligence, if you will, right? So, you know, one of the keys that I found to be very helpful as I was making that transition, you know, I began to build a professional network within the Defense Aviation Division. That was a direction that I knew I wanted to go. And, you know, I began to build a network, and, you know, I targeted specific veterans, right? So I found veterans, maybe in the Guard, maybe in the Reserve, folks that have transitioned in, you know, 12, 24 months prior to me. And I began to ask questions, and I began to understand the culture from the inside out. And that enabled me to do a couple of things. One, make a well-informed decision, right? So when I signed that offer letter, but also it helped me manage expectations up front, right? So how does the management staff operate? How do they communicate? How do they support one another? How are disciplinary actions carried out, right? So I struggled with that one tremendously. You know, you have someone show up late for work, you know, and I was like ready to lose my mind, right?
Right,
and,
right.
You know, you miss first formation, right? And no, it's okay. And those things are generally accepted, right? It's just a minor infraction. But anyway, I digress. The, you know, the intelligence that I was able to build really helped me make a good decision. And it allowed me to level my own expectations. And, you know, as I walked in day one, it wasn't actually walking in day one. I was not a day one guy. You know, I understood from the inside out, you know, how that business ran, that particular location operated. And again, I think those are all things that we can do in our planning that help improve one, you know, the our effectiveness, our ability to retain employment with that employer for as long as we so choose, but certainly greater than 18 months. You know, and the third thing, it really helps us get into the right mindset, you know, as we take off that uniform. Here's what life's going to look like. And as soon as we can begin to mentally process that and go through that that systematic process, you know, the better the benefit of the organization, and certainly the better benefit for you in that transitioning of family with you.
Yeah, and I liked how you mentioned about the building the network of people who might, you know, might be in the military, might be veterans who transitioned, you know, a few months before you did, who might already be in these organizations, because they can help you bridge that gap much easier, right, than, you know, a typical civilian who might be in the same position or, you know, same company, but they don't have that military experience to really understand, help you understand what that transition is going to be like. We've had other people on the podcast talking about employment and networking and that type of thing too. And, you know, things like LinkedIn, you know, if you can get on LinkedIn and find people who work for these companies who have a military background, and, you know, try to connect with them and reach out and pick their brain and see what they have to say about working for this company and you know, what the transition was like for them. If it happened to be their first, you know, job outside of the military, it might be a good way to go as well. You know, I'm sure there's other networking groups and things like that, but, you know, with so much information out there on the internet that, you know, and with these days of not necessarily being able to do in-person events, you know, as frequently as we might like to do, you know, online stuff is, you know, a relatively decent substitute for it. So that might be a good way to go too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, exercise whatever strategy, you know, that we may have a particular preference for, but, yeah, build a, you know, build that intelligence and do so with a systematic and a specific end state in mind. Yeah. You know, that's a great point.
Yeah, for sure. Any other tips or tricks or advice that you might have for people transitioning out of the military?
Yeah, you know, I would say the last one here, maybe a small plug, but, you know, make sure that you keep in mind your mission. And, you know, it's one of the things that I loved about wearing the uniform. You know, everything was all about the mission. Everything we did, the mission prep, mission planning, mission execution, you know, mission, you know, review, this after action process. I loved it, you know, so it gave us a sense of purpose. And so I would highly recommend, you know, for anyone that is transitioning, you know, follow your passions, understand really what it is you want to accomplish. If it's simply, you know, a salary, right? I'm going after a specific salary and a lifestyle. That's great. Do that. If that fuels you, if that fills your passion, but keep in mind of a mission, understand what that passion is and make that your mission, commit to it. It doesn't even have to be something that you're doing full time. It could be a volunteer opportunity. You know, one of the things that I found that has helped me personally, has helped me mentally, is, you know, seeking out organizations that are like-minded to, you know, help and serve others, right? So in the military, we serve, and it is all about the service. You know, so for instance, here, for me, it's Mission 22, a veteran suicide awareness and prevention organization. It gives me my sense of mission. It gives me a task. It gives me a purpose and allows me to, in a volunteering capacity, serve others. So I still get this sense of service, this sense of, you know, sacrifice from like a time, you know, standpoint, but it fuels me. And if you're a person transitioning out of the military, I would highly recommend that, you know, as you develop this objective, you know, professionally speaking, don't forget your mission. And if your mission was serving, then you probably still have a little bit of that in you where you still want to serve others and allow others to be brought up, you know, through your work. So, Yeah. That's what I would recommend. You know, find and align yourself with an organization who is going to fill that passion and gives you that sense of purpose.
Awesome. Yeah. I think that's a great piece of advice. You know, following that passion, because you do, sometimes you could end up finding that you feel like you have no purpose, or right. no mission anymore. You know, you're working for a company that, you know, maybe you're finding that your values don't necessarily align with them, with the company that you're working for. But, you know, if you have that purpose, that thing that's, you know, driving you and keeping you going, that can be hugely beneficial for you and including your mental state, you know, as you're making this big life transition, out of the military. So, well, Cliff, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you and talk about all the things that we've talked about in terms of the transition period. Where can people go to get in touch with you and find out more about some of the stuff that you do and any of the resources that you might have talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that. And it's been my pleasure. So folks that are interested in maybe some consulting, you can definitely look me up on LinkedIn. It's just Cliff D. Payne. And if you're interested in more so personal defense, personal protection in and out of your home, maybe some preparedness strategies, or if you're someone that has that specific background transitioning out of the military and you're wanting to make that a full-time career, let me know. I'm more than happy to help. So you can find that on Facebook and Instagram, and the tag will be Decisive Aim, two separate words. So that is the defensive tactics business that we operate. So again, LinkedIn, look up Cliff D. Payne, and on Instagram and Facebook, look me up at Decisive Aim.
Perfect. Yeah. And I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. So anyone looking to reach out to you to get more of that information can find all of that there.
Excellent.
Thank you again.
Yeah, it's truly been my pleasure. And again, I want to thank you for carrying this torch. I think it's incredibly important that we help and advocate for veterans wherever we can. And I think what you're doing is fantastic and really appreciate it. And hope to be a guest here again shortly.
Awesome. We'll definitely have to have you back on. Great. Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.